Live from Washington, it's the Inside Scoop, with all the news the government does not want you to know. Now, here's the host of the Inside Scoop, Congressional Attorney Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, bringing you all the news the government does not want you to know. I used to work as an attorney in Congress for the Democrats. My guest today is Mike Lane. He's a Republican strategist and the president of Intellifence Strategies. We're going to debate the news of the week. Topics today include why it is that the Republicans lost three straight special elections in a row and whether their party is in trouble in congressional elections in 2008. Number two, Obama and McCain are sparring over what the United States policy should be about negotiating with Iran. Number three, California has issued an amazing Supreme Court ruling, becoming the second state in the United States to allow all its citizens to marry, including its gay citizens. And lastly, gas prices. What is the solution? Is it a gas tax holiday or some other solution? And whatever topic you bring up. This is a live show. That means that you can call in. The local number is on your screen. If you're listening on the internet at radioinsidescoop.com, you can call toll-free 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. And feel free to tell us that you disagree with Mike, you disagree with me, you disagree with both of us. Bring up any topic of your own. We're glad to hear it. It's part of your show. Welcome again, Mike.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be back.
Well, let's start with the first topic because I got to say, your party seems to be in trouble. We're not talking about New York, California, Massachusetts. We're talking about Dennis Hastert's old seat in Illinois. The former Speaker of the House lost his seat. Then we go down south to Louisiana. You lose another seat. And then, and perhaps the most conservative state in the United States, in Mississippi, the Republicans lose yet another seat in a special election. Sounds like your party's in a bit of trouble this year.
Mark, infrequently we agree. I agree 100% with what you just said. The Republicans are in a lot of trouble at this point. The good news is there's still 5.5 months left till the election. That is essentially 20 lifetimes in politics. There's plenty of time to reverse things, but if the election were held today, it would be a tsunami in favor of your party.
And why is that, in your view?
Well, it's essentially the unpopularity of the president and the fact that the Congress has tied itself to the success of the president. And while the president, for whatever reason, is being unsuccessful in the public opinion polls and running the lowest. I mean, he'd been hovering around his floor at 33% for about a year, and he managed to fall down to 31% again in the last poll last week. As long as the Congress does not establish themselves, or the Republicans in Congress do not establish themselves as a different brand from what the president is, then we're headed for a major disaster come November.
Mike, I've seen some polls that suggest that 28%. I'm still hoping he breaks through that Nixon floor. He is George Bush is the second lowest president in all presidential ratings in history. They've taken them since World War II. And the only one he's higher than is Nixon just before he was forced from office. I think he can break that barrier. I think he can go below 24. Go, Bush, go. But let's face it, the reason they're not happy with the president isn't because of some personal dislike with George Bush. Everyone seems to think they could have a drink with the president, whether or not he's off the juice or not. But the real question is the economy and Iraq. I mean, that's the reason. Let's face it. The economy is in the toilet, due in no small part to this president. And Iraq is a mess. It's a never-ending morass. There's no end in sight. Those are the reasons that people oppose this president and this Congress, aren't they?
Actually, Mark, now we finally found an area to disagree about. Those are actually not the reasons. The reason is this president has never been a particularly good communicator. We've had good news lately on the economy. We seem to have bottomed out. We're not going to have a recession. The economy.
We're already in a recession.
No, we are. Actually, we're not in a recession. And the latest numbers indicated we had positive growth for the economy for the first quarter of the year. That's through the end of March, 1st of April. We had positive growth. For a recession, as you know, because we've discussed it, you need two consecutive quarters of negative growth. Even Warren Buffett, Democrat extraordinaire, now says that the worst is over, that the Federal Reserve acted in time. They did all the right things. We're coming out of it. We're not going to have a recession. But this president has so put himself in a corner or so put himself in a hole that when he speaks, nobody listens. And so there's no really getting out there and selling his programs and selling how good it is. The Congress has to do that. To do that, they have to disengage from essentially a brand that has been so damaged that it can't be rehabilitated at this point. Maybe history will do it, but at this point, the president is doomed to the kind of numbers that he's suffering through now.
Mike, I do have to say it does warm my heart to hear you attack the president, to say that
not
he's
attacking
doomed,
him.
That you realize that people need to
not
run away from this president.
Not attacking
I seem to
him.
Recall we had many years on this show where you were praising George Bush and his leadership on the economy and on Iraq back when his poll numbers are good, but apparently you're just willing to trash the president when he's doing bad, and I'm glad to hear it. Welcome
Mark,
to my side of the aisle.
Mark, if you listen closely, I'm doing anything but trashing the president. If anything, I am trashing his communication skills, and nobody ever said that the president was a good communicator. In fact,
he tricked Americans into believing that there were WMDs in Iraq. Who says he isn't a good communicator?
Actually, that was the intelligence community that did that, not the president. The whole point with the president is that things are going fine, but the mass media will tell you that things are going awful. Howard Dean, you say everybody says they could have a nice drink with the president. You know, he's a good guy. Howard Dean, if you listen to the venomous, vile stuff that he says, out there every day just trashing the president and trashing McCain, He's running the negative campaign that so far Barack Obama doesn't seem to want to run, but he will, trust me.
Mike, they're trashing the president's policies.
No, they're trashing the president personally. No, they're actually trashing the president personally. If you go to Daily Kos and you take a look at the photos of, and Daily Kos, we all know, is the
liberal blog.
It's the parent company of the Democratic National Committee. It's the holding company.
It's a liberal blog, let's face it.
You go there and you see pictures of the Bush family wedding interspersed with just some of the more vile, disgusting things that you've ever seen. This is the Democratic idea of what it's all about.
Start quoting Daily Kos, I can start quoting the Freepers. Let's face it, Daily Kos is
it's a
public website. Anyone and everyone, I've posted on Daily Kos. All you have to do is you sign up, you post what you want, and if people like it, it gets a number of hits. You can't blame everything that happens at Daily Kos or the Democratic Party any more than I can blame everything that happens on the Rush Limbaugh show or the Freepers website on the Republican
Party.
All right,
well, if you post there, you did see the absolutely disgusting, vile pictures that were interspersed with the Bush family wedding photos.
I didn't see them. But,
it was pretty vile.
Okay. Well, it's not about personal attacks. The reason the president's opinion ratings are low are not because of pictures at Daily Kos. It's because Americans don't see a way out, and they compare these years to the Clinton years. In the Clinton years, as you'll recall, we not only had the longest expansion in post-war in American history, maybe in all of American history, I don't know, but the rich got richer, the middle class got richer, and the poor got richer. Now, after 7 years of George W. Bush, if you make over $1 million, you're doing better than you ever have before. But if you're middle class, if you're lower middle class, if you're poor, you're doing worse off. And John McCain wants to continue George Bush's economic policies.
All right, a couple things on that, because you're misleading our listeners, and I'm going to straighten them out for you so they can be educated and know what's going on. The first thing is John McCain is running far ahead of the generic ballot question for Congress. If you ask people,
I'm just saying he supports George Bush's economic policy.
If you ask people, do we need a Republican for Congress or a Democrat for Congress? The Democrats have about a 15-point lead. The Republicans are down in the low 30s. Democrats are up in the high 40s. It's at this point not an insurmountable lead because we have 20 political lifetimes left to straighten it out. But it's a lead that Republicans better take seriously. Now,
that's a separation. Now,
what are they doing? What they should do is they should tie themselves to John McCain. John McCain is anything. John McCain spent 8 years being a thorn in Bush's side. Every time the president wanted to do something.
But on his economic policies, the thing that Americans care most about, every poll shows, is the economy. And on the economy, John McCain is George Bush's third term. He believes that the tax he switched, he used to be against George Bush until he realized that he couldn't get any Republican votes that way. So now he thinks we should have massive deficits as far as the eye can see.
Nope.
We should make corporations get tax cuts. Nothing for middle class people, nothing for poor people, except that maybe he'll get rid of the gas tax, which we'll talk about.
Let's go into what John McCain says about taxes and spending, because he's probably the most fiscally responsible member of the United States Senate. He voted against the Bush tax cuts because he said they were not coupled with spending cuts. And John McCain has...
That's right.
John
and then
McCain,
he changed his mind.
John McCain... No. What
he flip-flopped.
No,
yeah,
what,
I like John McCain of 8 years ago
says is now you cannot raise taxes in a soft economy, which is what we have. We don't have a recession. We don't have I mean, but we do have a soft economy, and you cannot raise taxes astronomically the way Barack Obama wants to raise taxes.
Astronomically.
The last thing you want to do is take money out of the economy in a soft economy.
Mike.
Barack Obama is going to drive us into a recession that the American people are going to regret for about 3 years.
Mike, I know Republican policy on
You cannot
taxes.
Raise taxes the way Obama wants to raise it.
Let me describe Republican policy
I mean,
policy
we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars of tax increases under
on
Obama.
On people who make over $1 million, people who make over $250,000, they can afford it because they're making out like banshees.
Why are savings an investment bad thing?
Let me ask you this. Under Republicans, it seems to me, if you're in bad times, they want a tax cut, like right now. In good times, we had Republicans say, oh, no, we're going to pay off a surplus and we won't have any place to put all our money. We need a tax cut. The government's taking in too much. In average times, we need a tax cut. When we have huge deficits, we need a tax cut. In all economic times, we need a tax cut. And where do Republicans always want that tax cut? Oh, no, not on poor people, not on middle class people.
On the average hardworking people.
No, yeah, the average hardworking person making over $1 million a year.
No.
Congress had to force the $600 rebate down the president's throat. He wanted to give $300 to multimillionaires who didn't need it. It was Congress that said, no, we're going to put a cap at $75,000. Congress is looking out for the middle class, the lower middle class, and Barack Obama has made very clear he will also have a tax cut for middle class and lower middle class people. He will only raise taxes if you're making over $250,000 a year, in which case you're doing very well under George Bush.
Mark, first of all, let's reverse your argument. I've never met a Democrat who didn't want to raise taxes just on general principle.
It depends on whom.
I've never
on poor people?
I've never met a Democrat who didn't want to raise taxes on general principle. Notwithstanding the fact that there's nothing to spend it on, we just want to raise taxes because taxes is what Democrats do.
It is true that Democrats are more fiscally responsible than Republicans and don't like big debt.
In soft times, Democrats want to raise taxes. In great times, Democrats say, what better time to raise taxes because the money's there. In medium times, Democrats say, let's raise taxes.
And depends on whom.
Democrats
want to lower taxes on working people. They want to raise taxes on people who aren't working.
Let's go right
in the bank, capital gains.
As Warner Wolf used to say,
taxes.
Let's go right to the videotape. Here's Barack Obama's proposal. He wants to double the capital gains tax. Now, the most recent information out is that of people making $50,000 a year or less, $50,000 or less. We're talking people who are like in the lower middle class and down.
Right.
60% of those people own stock. Why does Barack Obama want to tax them out of their savings and investment?
And how much will that tax increase on them?
Why does
$300, $400?
Why
at the same time he's giving them a huge tax cut?
I haven't seen that tax cut. No. He wants to tax poor people, he wants to tax medium people.
That the capital gains tax on people earning under $50,000 a year is dollars.
It's right now.
Rich people make millions from that.
Right now, Mark, it's 15% for a capital gains tax, and Barack Obama wants to make it 28%.
Look,
now,
we have a massive
deficit. Almost doubling.
Why would
you do that?
I know you don't want to pay for this war in Iraq. I know you don't want to pay for it. I know you believe in massive debt. Let Saudi Arabia own us.
How would
you pay for it? I have an idea. Let's tax the oil companies a nice windfall profits tax and make them give up some of
the Oil companies have some of the lowest profits of any industry around.
Really?
Tell that to
ExxonMobil because they're doing really well.
What do you pay for a gallon of gasoline these days?
More than $4.
I paid $3.86 yesterday. Okay.
Good for you.
And I shop around. Republicans are good consumers. Now, what of that $3.86? How much goes to the oil companies?
A lot.
11 cents.
Now, a lot
11
more.
Cents.
We have to take a break. Folks, if you want to join in this discussion, it's easy to do. Pick up the phone, dial toll-free, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Next up, Obama versus McCain on Iran. We'll be right back after this.
How far would you go to help someone? Would you go to the end of your driveway? Would you cross a street? Would you cross an ocean? To a place 6,000 miles from home? And how long would you go? Would you go for a week? A month? A year? Would you go for 2 years? Would you go if you could use your knowledge to teach someone, and in the process, maybe learn something yourself? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps.
Jay, don't forget your helmet.
Will do.
Not my helmet.
Your bike helmet.
Oh, okay.
Hi, I'm James Thrash with the Washington Redskins. On the football field, a helmet is an important piece of equipment. I also wear another helmet that's just as important. A bike helmet. It's the most important piece of equipment you'll have the next time you're out on your bike. Wear yours and make sure your kids do too. Safety first with the Skins.
Monica and her friends want you to know that you should never get near a dog when it is eating, playing with a favorite toy, or sleeping. It's really important to make time for exercise and games and keep your dog's vaccines up to date. Never leave a dog in a small, confined space. This can make dogs aggressive like Monica. If you follow this advice, you and your dog can play safely and happily together.
We are back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. If you want to call in and join this discussion, please do. Don't hesitate. You can add your voice to the argument. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Used to work as a Democrat for Congress as an attorney. My guest is Republican strategist Mike Lane. Mike, I understand you've now thrown the president off the boat. You want to get away from him?
No, I want to save the president. I want to bring him along with us, but we're just not going to tie ourselves to his brand. We're going to tie ourselves to John McCain's brand.
Well, you're trying to tie yourself to John McCain, and it's interesting because Obama and McCain had an interesting dispute that's gone on for a while, but it really came up this week on Iran. But George Bush, who you say Republicans should shy away from, he seemed to add his own two cents to the dispute. Speaking before the Israeli Knesset, the Israeli parliament, on the solemn occasion of Israel's 60th anniversary, George Bush was taking pot shots at Obama. Now, he didn't mention him by name, but he started basically saying that if we talk to Iran, that he compared that to the appeasement of Adolf Hitler. Now, there's an old political law, if you will, perhaps honored more often in the breach. It's not a law and a rule of, but it's a rule of thumb that Democrats and Republicans are supposed to honor. And it is that politics are supposed to end when you leave the shores. Didn't the president, whatever you think of what George Bush had to say, we'll get to that, didn't he break the rule by implicitly criticizing Obama after leaving the United States?
First of all, let me disagree. I did not read it as Obama the first and second and third times I heard it. We can talk about that. But I did not think that was aimed at Obama. We can talk about it. Secondly, the rule about not criticizing or not getting involved in politics after you go across the shoreline was tossed out a long time ago, Mark. It used to be one. It's now something that's gone by the wayside. Democrats always criticize the president when he's overseas. Nancy Pelosi probably foremost among the critics
in
the whole thing.
When she's home,
Harry
Reid,
right, when he's overseas.
Yeah, but I'm saying she doesn't do it overseas.
No,
she doesn't go and go and speak before the House of Parliament in Great Britain and condemn the president.
Well, but it used to be also that you did not criticize the president when he was overseas conducting foreign policy. And that rule has gone by the wayside. I would argue that the Democrats were the ones who breached it most. You can argue the other way. It doesn't matter. The fact is the rule's gone.
But let's just say that it doesn't help your party. You said yourself that you think Republicans need to run away from the president. I was glad to hear it. I agree with you. I think it's the worst president we've ever had. I understand why they want to run away from
him. It's not the worst president we ever had. The worst communicator we've had.
I don't know. I mean, his crimes seem to be worse than Richard
Nixon's. He has kept us safe and made us safer every day since 2001.
Excuse me.
That is the key to the whole thing. The one thing, Mark, that's absolutely imperative is to win the... Kept us safe. We have not had a domestic attack on the United States since 2001. That's as a result of George Bush's administration. You can make book on that. And the fact that, you know, ultimately it's going to happen means you can't catch 1,000, you know, every single one. But we are safer than we've ever been, and we are on our way towards winning the war on terror.
We are definitely not safer than we've been.
We are much safer than we were on
Iran is more powerful now than it's been in a generation is precisely because George Bush didn't know what he was doing and took out Iran's great counterweight, Saddam Hussein, thinking, well, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, so he's going to help Iran. George Bush doesn't know what he's doing. The people who attacked us on September 11th, Al-Qaeda, is still free, sitting fat and pretty in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And Obama is the only one who said, I heard him on Meet the Press just last Sunday, saying that he wanted to increase the amount of force we have in Afghanistan to go after Al-Qaeda. George Bush can't do it because we're all wrapped up in Iraq.
The last thing you want to do is start putting conventional forces in Afghanistan. The Soviets tried it, and they got butchered like they were in a meat grinder.
So you just let Al-Qaeda go. What happened to catch him dead or alive?
I would not let him go. I would keep the special force presence there. I would keep looking for him. Perhaps I would be a little bit more aggressive over what Pakistan would like us to do. But I would not put conventional forces there en masse because the Soviets learned they got their butts kicked and they lost the war. The great Soviet machine lost to the Afghan rebels because they put them into that territory.
Taking
wrong
our troops
move.
Out of
Obama's
Afghanistan,
naive.
Moving everything to Iraq so we have nothing left to fight or Iran or Afghanistan or anywhere else around the world. I think that's naive, but I want to hear from our listener, Derek from McLean. Welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you, Mark. First of all, let me start with the first section that you talked about, which was the economic standpoint. And I just want to ask a question, first of all. Is that all that Democrats care about is the economy? Because there's a lot more at stake here than money. You know, that seems to be the problem with America. When you talk about the dollar and where we're standing today, it's because Americans have spent more than what we have, and it's all about comfort.
Well,
and, you know, I have a major problem with that. You know, what about integrity? What about the seriousness of terrorist threats? You know, just like your guest is speaking there, we are safer today than we ever have been. You know, in your comment about not having enough troops to go anywhere else other than Iraq is absolutely false. We have plenty of troops to go everywhere. We've had troops in Sudan, in Somalia, in all those other areas for years and years and years. In Germany?
You've said many things. Let me take them piece by piece with you. First of all, on the economy. No, obviously there are many, many issues other than the economy. Polls have shown that's the thing Americans care most about, so it's the thing that Democrats are talking mostly about because they have a different plan from George Bush's current plan. But it's a plan to help, yes, middle-class people, lower-middle-class people, so that we can be back more under, like we did under Bill Clinton, where everyone gets richer, not just the super rich. But each thing you say, integrity, all you have to do is look at the past Republican Congress to know what happened to integrity. You look at Jack Abramoff and Bob Ney, and just one right after the other kicked out because of their lack of integrity. This is a Congress that's bringing back integrity. In fact, the first thing this Democratic Congress did was lobbyist reform, and that helped bring integrity back. As far as being safer, I'm afraid you're wrong about us having enough troops for Iran and Afghanistan. We simply don't, and it's not just me that's saying it. There are generals that have said that we simply are at the worst level of preparedness we have been probably since World War II. And yeah, we could have a draft. That's one solution that no one seems to want. We just don't have enough troops to go around. We put all our troops in one basket, the basket of Iraq, a country that wasn't even a major threat to us, and so we're not able to go after Al-Qaeda.
You know, Mark, we say that the troops are stretched thin, and they are under the current standards.
Right.
I don't know if...
We've lowered the standards.
No. I'm talking about the current standard of deployment. You know, when World War II was around and we were going to win that war and we were going to do whatever it took as a country domestically and militarily to win that war, my father was in the Air Force and he was sent overseas. And you know what? He didn't come home after 12 months the way we do now.
Right.
He was deployed into the war theater for 4 years and didn't come home until we won the war. Didn't even come home on leave to see the birth of his child.
And Mike, you're absolutely right.
Now we have a different standard and we say, well, we've got to bring them home every 12 months. Well, under that new standard, yes, but we do have the capacity to wage more conflict should we choose or should we be pushed into that corner.
Mike,
at this point, we don't.
You're absolutely right about World War II. And that shows the difference between this president and his commitment and other presidents. If this president really wanted to commit us, he would have a draft like we had in World War II. He would tax us like he did in World War II. In World War II, the top tax bracket, paid more than 90% of their income to win that war. But George Bush knows that there's not the American commitment to do in Iraq what we did in World War II. George Bush knows that Saddam Hussein was not the same as Adolf Hitler, was not near the kind of threat that Hitler was, and wasn't worth expending every last bit of resources that we had the way the fight against Adolf Hitler was. If George Bush was really willing to fight this war, like a war to end all wars, like World War II, he'd have a draft. He'd raise taxes. But he doesn't, because he knows the American people aren't behind him.
All right, Mark, disagree. First of all, we don't have a draft. The military is much better, much more professional, much better trained, much more intelligent, much more capable than a draft military. We don't want a draft military. The only time we're going to have a draft military is if things get so bad that it's too late to start drafting and training the people anyway. We want a professional military.
I agree with you, but my point is that...
On the taxes, all I can say is thank the Lord that we don't pay 90% of our income in taxes for anything anymore. Why would we ever pay 90% of our income in taxes?
Why?
Now I have an agreement with you that we have run too high deficits. And part of it is that we haven't financed the war. However, one of the options that's on the table that I think everybody's looking at, John McCain certainly thinks is a good idea, is Iraq has about $35 billion surplus that they're running there from their economic recovery and from their oil revenues and things like that. The Democrats have always said, oh, we went into this war because of oil. You know, we want to steal all their oil. And so we haven't taken a penny of their money, and we haven't taken a drop of their oil since the whole thing started. I think maybe it is time to get a few billion here and a few billion there to help finance the whole thing and reduce the financial pressure on our budget. That would be a good thing, and John McCain would support that.
I'm going to agree with you. It would be a good thing, but John McCain wouldn't support it. And how do I know? Because we haven't insisted on it, right? Iraq is costing us $5,000 a second. Every second. Tick, tick, tick. $5,000 each second. That is a lot of money. Now, Wolfowitz appeared before the war began, before Congress, and said, this war will pay for itself. He said what you said. Their oil revenues, they'll pay for itself. Absolutely.
And we haven't done that. And we haven't done that.
And why haven't we done it? Because the Iraq government doesn't want to pay us to do it.
Well,
they don't think it's that important. The Iraq government says, we want you to sacrifice all your men and women, 4,000 lives, 30,000 wounded, and we want you to do it on your own dime. Well, you know what? I disagree. If Iraq is not willing to fight and pay for itself, then maybe we shouldn't be there.
No, this is actually one of the mistakes the president made. This is not, you know, you can't lay this whole thing at the feet of Iraq here. If the president had shown the leadership after, you know, not in the beginning, of course, you don't want to have them finance the first couple of days of the whole thing. But after it became clear that the expenses were going to be extended and that we were going to have a situation going on that was going to require our presence, then we should have shown the leadership and gone to the president of Iraq and explained that they were going to help finance this whole thing. They haven't done it. It's time to do it. I imagine that we'll probably have to wait. The president's not going to do that, but we'll have to wait until John McCain is elected president in November.
And then we will have a
decent contribution from the Iraqi people for their freedom and liberation.
Both sides want this war paid for, but the reality is the insurgents are going after our oil their oil supplies, the Iraqi oil supplies, not ours yet, because they know that that is something that can help the government finance itself. This is a government that's not willing to pay a penny towards what's supposed to be its own freedom, because let's face it, I think the Iraqis want us gone. If you want to join in the conversation like Derek did, give us a call, 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back on Iran after this.
Serves a sentence with you.
I'm Bob Costas, and I've been broadcasting sports for a long time. Much of what I do is ad-libbed, but still, one of the most important aspects of my job is being able to write. narrations, essays, commentaries. It's essential to express those thoughts and concepts clearly and concisely. Good writing is essential for almost any career. And with today's advanced technology, the National Commission on Writing reports that the need to write well has never been more important. Writing is everybody's business.
Sure, my neighbors Gene and Louise, they may be superheroes with superpowers, but that doesn't make them so super at saving energy and money.
Honey!
I may not be able to harness the power of the elements, but I save significant cash and help the environment with appliances, electronics, and windows featuring the Energy Star label. So discover your own energy-saving superpowers. Go to ase.org/consumers.
Mom, Dad's making fondue again.
We are back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Republican strategist Mike Lane is arguing with me. I'm a former congressional attorney for the Democrats. On the policies of the week, if you want to join in the debate, we encourage you to do so. Feel free to tell me I'm wrong or tell Mike he's wrong. Just call toll-free 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I just want to let you know that during the break, Mike and I do talk sometimes, and we came to an agreement, which is both of us support Iraq paying for this war as much as it can. I still want to bring our troops home. I don't think Mike does quite so soon as I do.
We'll be there 100 years as far
as
I'm concerned.
Yeah, I know. He supports McCain. But we both agree that Iraq should pay for it. Let me move on to another issue that separates Obama and McCain, and particularly came up a lot this week, and that's the issue of negotiations with Iran. Mm-hmm. Now, it's important to understand where they agree and where they disagree. I think both Obama and McCain agree Iran is a threat. It's a deadly threat. It's a threat to the United States. It's a threat to Israel. Both of them have committed to keeping Iran from getting nuclear weapons. The real difference in their policy, as I see it, is that McCain says he'll never negotiate with Iran. And what Obama has said is, look, we negotiate with the Soviet Union, a far more powerful country than Iran. We negotiate with China. Nixon went to China. Let's talk with them. That doesn't mean we'll agree with everything they say. In fact, we may disagree with most. We can give them a warning mano a mano, face to face, but we have to talk with them and find out where we can find agreement and where we shouldn't. You disagree with Obama?
I disagree with your characterization of John McCain. He didn't say we'll never negotiate with them. What he did was say you don't negotiate without preconditions. You know what the agenda is going to be. You know what you're going to talk about. You know what your objectives are. You do the staff work in advance. You know, you have the preconditions set. In the case of Iran, they have to renounce their stated intent to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. You don't negotiate with terrorists, et cetera. And then John McCain would be perfectly happy to sit down. The problem is, in a debate last January or February, when all of the Democratic candidates were up there, the question was posed, would you agree within the first year of office to sit down with a plethora of bad guys, and he named Kim Jong-il and
Chavez
and Ahmadinejad and Hamas and Hezbollah.
Hamas and Hezbollah were not named because Obama doesn't agree to negotiate with them.
And
I just want to separate the two.
Right,
he agreed with state leaders,
And would he agree to sit down without precondition? And Barack had a two-word answer. He said, I will, quote unquote. Yeah, absolutely, I would do that. Even Hillary Clinton said that Barack Obama was, in her words, irresponsible and naive, quote unquote, from Hillary Clinton. It's, you know, our foreign policy whole apparatus has been dealt on. You don't sit down, you don't give these essentially little punks around the world the prestige of marching into the Oval Office, sitting down across the desk from the president, and gaining the prestige of having that meeting and coming out and thumbing their nose at our country and thumbing their nose and saying, you know what, we're still going to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. I think Mrs. Clinton was right. I think it was irresponsible and naive of Senator Obama to do that.
Let me agree with part of what you have to say while disagreeing with another part. I don't think that you don't plan it. Of course you plan it.
But,
of course you get
an agenda. But Obama said he didn't need to plan it. He said without any precondition at all.
Well,
without any
precondition.
Come on in, Ahmadinejad. Let's sit down. Have a cigar.
Well, first of all, I don't think, and I hope, and this is where I hope you're right, that Obama would not invite him in at the White House and have a state dinner for him. This isn't like the Prime Minister of England or the President of France. What he's saying is that you've got to have negotiations, as he quotes John F. Kennedy for saying, we should never negotiate out of fear, but we should never fear to negotiate. Nixon went to China.
With preconditions.
Reagan talked to Gorbachev.
With preconditions.
To talk to Gorbachev?
Absolutely.
No. The deal was made after they talked.
There was a tight agenda. They knew exactly what was on the table,
but they didn't make the Soviet Union give up their nuclear weapons before they talked with them.
No. But there were preconditions.
Ronald Reagan said, trust but verify. And he was right about that. What that means is you do sit down and talk to your enemies. Yes, of course there should be an agenda. I don't think Obama's going to walk in and say, oh, hey, what do you want to talk about?
That's what he said, though.
No, it's not. I mean, that's a silly characterization.
I will.
He said that he would talk with him without preconditions.
Personally.
But that doesn't mean...
Not back-channel negotiations, not mid-level diplomatic staffers working the whole thing up.
Mike.
He said he would personally talk with the leader of Iran.
Mike, we have...
Now, maybe it's even worse than that. Maybe it's not Ahmadinejad. Maybe it's the Grand Ayatollah that he's going to talk with.
It should be, because
Even worse.
Even better, because the Grand Ayatollah is in charge. Ahmadinejad's a joke. He's really just put there by the Grand Ayatollah.
Pathetic little puppet?
Yes, I agree. But... before Ahmadinejad, there was a much more free election in Iran. Most people don't know about it. I know you know about it. They elected a guy, Mohammad Khatami. Now, Khatami was not, you know, our perfect ally, but he was far more friendly than Ahmadinejad. Ahmadinejad is. He was actually a moderate in Iranian terms and definitely someone we should sit down and talk to. Had George Bush talked with Khatami 4 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, we wouldn't even have this puppet, pathetic puppet, Ahmadinejad, in office right now. By saying, we will never talk to Iran without any preconditions, we missed a tremendous opportunity, and things just got worse.
I don't necessarily agree with that.
You don't agree that we should have spoken with Khatami?
No, we had someone who was less of a... you know, pathetic puppet, I guess, is our word that we agree on here.
Well, no, because Khatami had a relatively free election.
Twice in one show, we're agreeing on something here.
That's true.
When someone says, I'm going to wipe you off the face of the earth, Ahmadinejad has already said that he sees a world without the United States of America. You know, that's certainly possible and on his agenda, a world without the United States of America. You know what? I'm not going to negotiate with a guy like that. I'm going to take my fist and I'm going to put it right in his face until he changes his mind. That's the way you deal with jerks like this. You don't give them the prestige of sitting there in the Oval Office and you know, holding a press conference on the way out.
Mike, Nikita Khrushchev took a shoe out, hit it on the table of the United Nations and said, we will bury you.
Right.
Nikita Khrushchev was not only seeking the annihilation of the United States, but he had a lot more power to accomplish it. And yet... in the Cuban Missile Crisis, when it became necessary, John F. Kennedy negotiated, actually talked him down and prevented a much greater crisis. No one is saying Ahmadinejad is any great guy, but if we're willing to negotiate with the Soviet Union, we should be willing to at least talk to Iran. Give them a stern message, by all means. I'm not saying give in on anything. In fact, Obama's been very clear. He won't allow them to have nuclear weapons, but we've got to open that channel.
This is why you have back-channel negotiations, and this is why you have mid-level and semi-higher-level meetings. You don't put the prestige of the presidency on the line.
You prepare the way with mid-level, and there I'll agree with you. Let me go on and talk about another... we've got a listener question, it looks like, but someone who hasn't called in. That's fine. You can do that. Some people want to leave their questions and not to talk on the air. How can Abbas trust Bush's efforts to have a Palestinian state after Bush's Israel speech? I'll tell you something to the anonymous listener who just called in. In my view, Bush speaks out of both sides of his mouth. He gave, before Israel, a very strong pro-Israel speech, 60th anniversary on Israel, and then he speaks before a Palestinian audience, and he gives a very pro-Palestinian speech. One of the things I like about Barack Obama is Barack Obama went to Ramallah and said pro-Israel things before a Palestinian audience. And he speaks before Israeli audiences, and he says he supports a Palestinian state. He doesn't change his message based on who his audience is. Bush basically, you know, said one thing to Israel and another thing to the Palestinians.
Look, what the president did, the president will emphasize different things for different groups, of course. The president has supported, he has put himself as administration on the record as supporting a Palestinian state. I believe the question is, you know, how can Abbas, you know, believe that? Well, what the president said was that, you know, appeasement is not the way to go here, that tough negotiations and renouncing of the intent to wipe Israel off the face of the earth is the precondition.
But Abbas
now,
isn't seeking...
I know.
Abbas is not Hamas.
I know. We can negotiate with Abbas
because he's
Fatah.
He is not Hamas. He is moderate.
And in fact, we've given the Fatah government hundreds of millions of dollars in aid. Which has been cut off when Hamas took over, properly, I would say.
We're giving back now. Now that they separated Gaza and the West Bank.
We're still giving it to Fatah. We're giving it to the not-so-bad guys as opposed to the really bad guys. And, you know, as long as Abbas shows himself to be a continued moderate and to work his way through the process, there's a chance now, not a high chance, I don't think, but there's a chance now we could have a truce in the Gaza coming up. Egypt's been trying to broker this whole thing, and it seems to be over the whole thing of Hamas refusing to give back Khaled Shalit, the Israeli army soldier that was kidnapped in the last hostilities that they had there. If Hamas really wants peace, if the Palestinians really want peace, they should give Shalit back. And I think you'll see a truce that'll go for 6 months, and it'll lessen the pressure and allow for negotiations. Will it work? Oh, the Lord only knows. They've been fighting each other forever, but let's give it a shot.
I'll tell you, Mike.
Hamas doesn't want peace.
Obviously, Hamas doesn't want peace. Obviously, Hamas wants the destruction of Israel. Obviously, they should give the soldier back. But I don't think the negotiations between Israel and Abbas, the head of the Palestinian Authority, should be dependent on Hamas. If you allow Hamas to scuttle negotiations, they will always scuttle negotiations. I think Olmert is acting in good faith. I think Abbas is acting in good faith. I'd like to see a little more. I mean, this president basically waited 7 years and did nothing, and now in his legacy, he's going to solve the Middle East crisis. I would like us to see more effort to help the two of them work together. If we can get a West Bank state that's pretty good, it won't be on the entire West Bank, but it'll be on more than 90% of the West Bank, that works and is steady and doesn't have violence, then I think the people of Gaza will recognize the solution is negotiation rather than war.
Shades of Bill Clinton, you know, spending the last year of the presidency focusing on this particular
thing. Bill Clinton came very close.
He failed, and it's...
He only failed because of Yasser Arafat.
Well, and Yasser Arafat was a duplicitous, double-crossing little scoundrel.
Yes, he was, but Abbas, I don't think, is like that.
But it's unlikely that this effort will succeed by the end of the presidency either.
I can agree with you that it is unlikely. Let me move on. We're going to start the conversation now. We're going to have to go in over the break. But the California Supreme Court, just last week, made California the second state in the United States to allow all its citizens to get married. Every consenting adult in California can now get married, not just straight people, gay people too. And, of course, a lot of gay people in California were celebrating in the streets. Ellen DeGeneres is going to get married. She announced on her show. And now we have a lot of people who are trying to sponsor a constitutional amendment in California. You can overturn the will of a Supreme Court by amending the Constitution of California.
It was a constitutional interpretation. Right. So if you amend the Constitution, what you've done is essentially redefined it.
But they're doing it by initiative. Legal. And I don't think the people of California will be so hateful as to say to Ellen, sorry, you have to divorce your wife. We get to choose who your spouse is. Why should someone's choice of who they marry be on the ballot for anybody?
Mark, the people of each state have the right to set their own rules. They have the right to amend their own constitution. They have the right to do anything. It was a very narrow decision. It was a 4-3 decision by the Supreme Court. The Chief Justice said it was the most difficult decision because he didn't really know if he had the firm constitutional grounds, but he thought it was the right thing to do.
Where do you say that? It's not in the opinion, because I've read the opinion.
Not in the opinion. This was in an interview afterwards.
I assure you it's not in the opinion.
Interview afterwards.
All right.
We have a political process playing itself out in California now. My point on this whole thing is that this is a federalism issue. It should be left to the states. California has made one of its decisions. There is another decision that may or may not be made if the people who are circulating the ballot petitions get enough signatures to get on the ballot. And it's by no means a small hurdle in California to get on the ballot. You need
8%.
In a state with that many people,
of the voters in the last election,
it's a huge number of people. Then the people have the right to weigh in. As you know, 10 years ago, a decade ago, there was a ballot initiative for exactly the same thing in California. It was not a constitutional amendment. It was just sort of the people expressing their will. The people, by a fairly healthy majority, expressed their will that they wanted to define marriage as a man and woman thing. We'll see what happens in this next shot.
I'll tell you something, Mike. I think that times have changed. I think that California, the rest of the nation, has grown a lot in the past 8 years. I think they'll have a hard time telling people like Ellen, we're going to forcibly divorce you against your will. We'll talk more about this after the break. I want to encourage listeners to call in 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. In my view, civil rights should never be on the ballot. We'll be right back. right back.
One day, I forgot to throw away my trash after lunch. But then I saw it later when I was playing in the woods. The next week, I went boating with my grandpa, and there it was. I tried to go swimming, but I couldn't because of my trash. And when I went fishing, well, you can guess what I caught that day. So now I always throw away my trash in the garbage can, where it belongs.
One in eight Americans goes hungry. One idea helped change that. A community started a garden that blossomed into farmers markets. One in six children lives in poverty. One group of women found an answer by opening a daycare center that their neighbors could afford. Today, 36 million Americans live in poverty. But one by one, people are helping themselves and each other to change the picture of poverty to one of hope. For easy ways you can help, visit PovertyUSA.org.
Every year, 250,000 Americans are diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease.
My fellow scientists and I are working on treatments and a cure for this deadly disease.
Millions of lives are at stake. Alzheimer's disease affects one in three families.
We're committed to uncovering the mystery of Alzheimer's.
And we're not going to quit until the job is done.
To find out more about Alzheimer's disease, call 1-800-437-2423.
Only through research will a cure be found.
Jay, don't forget your helmet.
Will do.
Not that helmet.
Your bike helmet.
Oh, okay.
Hi, I'm James Thrash with the Washington Redskins. On the football field, a helmet is an important piece of equipment. I also wear another helmet that's just as important. A bike helmet. It's the most important piece of equipment you'll have the next time you're out on your bike. Wear yours and make sure your kids do too. Safety first with the Skins.
We are back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is your last chance to join in the debate, and we encourage you to do so. Mike and I both very much like calls. Whether you agree with both of us, neither of us, or only one of us, the toll-free number, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. You can see the local number as well. Mike, I don't believe civil rights should ever be on the ballot. The California decision, interestingly enough, devoted most of its, and I read the entire decision, most of the basis for the decision was based on an earlier 1948 decision called Perez v. Sharp. And in that decision, the court was the first court in the nation, California was the first state in the nation, to say that a ban on interracial marriage was unconstitutional. Now, bans on interracial marriage were voted on by legislatures of the majority of states at one point. In fact, in 1967, when the United States Supreme Court finally struck down all bans on interracial marriages in 1967, there were still 13 states, including the state of Virginia, obviously, Loving v. Virginia, where the voters, through their elected representatives, had said, we don't want interracial marriages. The majority of people of Virginia would have told you in polls and through their elected representatives, we don't want blacks and whites to marry. Should the majority ever have a right to tell some individual that they can't get married? I would say no. I think that civil rights are constitutional and shouldn't be up to the voters to decide.
Well, first of all, Mark, I will agree with you that I think the vote will be a much different event than it was 10 years ago when they did it, when it passed rather handily. Was it 62%?
62%. Right.
If it no matter what happens this
it's
time,
it's going to be close.
I think it's going to be 52-48 either way.
I agree, 51, it'll be 49. Close, but
it's going to be in that area.
I think it's going to be rejected. I think the court will be upheld.
Now, secondly, well, it'll be sustained by the voters.
By the people. Right.
But secondly, you know, California's constitution allows people to advance constitutional amendments by referenda, and they are guaranteed that right, as the court said. Other people are guaranteed other rights. The people are guaranteed the right to circulate petitions, to qualify, to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot, and to put it to the people. And so the people will vote if they are able to get on the ballot. If they reach that first hurdle, then there will be a great debate. There will be a great campaign. There will be a lot of effort on both sides, and we will find out what the people ultimately decide. But at this point, we agree. It will be a close vote either way. It's not going to be a real runaway that it was 10 years ago.
You and I both know that the only thing that trumps the California Constitution is the federal Constitution. And the 14th Amendment to the federal Constitution, you know me, I always carry it by my side. 14th Amendment says that no state No state doesn't. It doesn't just restrict the federal government. No state shall deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Now, I realize we don't have a United States Supreme Court that, in my view, upholds this document. But can anyone deny that the state of California, prior to this decision, and indeed most states in this country, deprive their people of liberty and equality? Liberty to marry the person of their choice, and equality treating their gay citizens the same right as their straight citizens. I realize the United States Supreme Court is a right-wing conservative court that doesn't give a damn about this document, the Constitution, but and they probably would rule against me. But let me suggest to you that the language of the 14th Amendment, its strict construction, if you will, says that you have to give everyone the same liberty, the same equality under the law.
Mark, what you're essentially arguing is that there's no difference between men and women. And I think that, you know, that can be an argument if you want to make it. I think there's a vast majority of Americans and jurists who would argue the other side, that there is a difference between a man and a woman.
In terms of equal rights under the law?
No.
Are you saying that men and women should have different rights under the law?
No, I'm saying that what you're arguing is that there's no difference, if it was me, there's no difference between me marrying a man or me marrying a woman, that they're both the same.
Where do you think the government can discriminate legally between men and women?
This is not discrimination. This is accepting that there are differences among the genders. And does the state have a compelling reason to pass legislation that will, number one, encourage the kind of family and societal stability that you get out of a married society? And number two, can you take it further and say they have a compelling interest to do that among the gay community? And I think the historic answer has been yes on number one and no on number two. Now, you're going to make the argument that there's a compelling reason to do it on number two among the gay community. And I think there's a lot of Americans that don't see that argument, don't agree with it.
They may not see the argument, but they're wrong. And they were wrong in the 1960s with segregation, and they're wrong today. Look, there are always going to be prejudiced people. One of the interesting things that the court held was that really this was sexual orientation discrimination rather than sex discrimination. That isn't the only way to see this. The Hawaii court, the first court to rule on this back in the 90s, said that, in fact, it was sex discrimination. It was discrimination because a man could marry a woman, but a woman couldn't marry a woman. So she was being denied the right to marry a woman on the basis of her sex. Either way of looking at it, it's equality under the law. What the California Supreme Court said is it is not fair that straight people can marry whoever they want and gay people can't get married at all. They can only marry straight people, and I can't find a single person of right or left of any kind, religious leader from Jerry Falwell to the far left, that thinks that gay straight marriages are a good idea. Most people think it's a bad idea, psychologically bad for families, bad for the children. If those are bad ideas, then telling gay people they can't marry at all, chastity, may be what the Catholic Church wants, but it should not be what the government wants.
Well, I don't think anybody's suggesting, some people might be suggesting chastity. Certainly, I don't think the courts are suggesting chastity. You know,
they're saying that gay people shouldn't get married at all.
They're saying the state has no particular interest in sanctioning a gay marriage.
What they're saying is that they will be a first-class citizens and second-class citizens.
The state has no compelling interest in sanctioning a gay marriage. Now, if two people want to go off and get married in their own commitment ceremony and find person to preside over that ceremony, they can call themselves married. It just is not sanctioned by the state at this point.
So, for example, when Virginia says, we won't sanction a transracial marriage, they can go off, a black and a white person. Let's say we get rid of the criminal penalties that they used to have in Virginia. Mm-hmm. A black and a white person can say they're married, quote unquote, but the state won't sanction this race mixing. We won't have a transracial marriage. Blacks should marry blacks. Whites should marry whites. The people of Virginia have spoken. A majority of Virginians support it. A majority of legislatures support it. Sounds to me like you're against the decision in Loving v. Virginia, aren't you?
By the way, as a footnote, the plaintiff in that, Mrs.
Mildred Loving, yes,
died about 10 days ago.
She did.
It's very sad. She was a great woman.
Yes, she was. But why? Why don't you think the court was right? In 1967, isn't it the exact same argument?
No, it's a different argument. Because the argument in the interracial things, the people who were trying to overturn the no racial intermarriage thing were arguing that there's no difference between a minority racial woman and a Caucasian woman. That they're, for sake of that, there's no difference. And they prevailed in that argument. What you're trying to do is take that argument and say there's no difference between a male and a female.
You know
and
what?
That's a wholly different argument.
That was not
you,
their argument.
You may prevail, but...
Yeah, that was not their argument. I don't know if you've read, actually read, Loving v. Virginia. It's a terrific case, 1967. I urge you to read it.
I haven't read it, but
And whether you've read Perez v. Sharp, the California case in 1948, what both of those cases said was not there's no difference between an African-American woman and a Caucasian woman. They didn't say that. Here's what they said. They said that marriage is a fundamental right. It's one of those rights that belongs to every individual in the United States, and that it is the state is powerless to take away this substantive right. Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness is one way to look at it. They call it substantive due process. It means the same thing. They said the right to marry, the right to raise children, these are fundamental rights that the state can't take away. And they said Mildred Loving has those rights, Richard Loving has those rights. It's under those grounds that the California Supreme Court said, well, if everyone has this right, it should go to everyone, straight or gay.
It will also have a political impact on the campaign. As you know, I think Senator McCain and Barack Obama have very similar positions on this, which is a position similar to mine, which is this is not the federal government's responsibility.
That's true.
They're both into federalism on this, and what California does, California does. What Massachusetts does or what Idaho does is up to them.
That's true. They do differ on civil unions,
though. The thing where I think this advantages McCain is that now it's the issue of judges legislating from the bench. You know, had a referendum where the people spoke to the tune of 62%. The judges overturned that. And now we're talking about McCain and his strict interpretation judges that he's going to appoint and Obama's judges that will legislate from the bench. I think this is ultimately going to be a political advantage to McCain. I don't know how Obama even begins to combat this in a political sense.
You call it legislating from the bench. It seems to me that in Loving v. Virginia and in Perez v. Sharp in 1967 and 1948, what did the judges do? They legislated from the bench. The people had said ban interracial marriages, and the court said, you know what? The whole purpose of a constitution is that sometimes, particularly when protecting the rights of minorities, sometimes the court has to overrule the majority of people. Now, there's all kinds of times when I think the court should respect the rule of the majority, but when it comes to civil rights, I think there's a time they shouldn't. And it's interesting, one of the judges in a concurring opinion said something that is really extraordinary. She said that it shouldn't even be up to a vote of the people. It'll be interesting to see, even if they win, whether this judge says that they still lose.
Well, you know what? The people, as we've discussed, the people have the right, the constitutional right, to advance a constitutional amendment by referendum. And one of the things that people might do if they advance this, and if it passes, for whatever good or bad that might be, if the court tried to declare a constitutional amendment to be unconstitutional,
they can vote the Supreme Court offices.
I think there would be a constitutional amendment to abolish the California Supreme Court.
The California Supreme Court actually is elected, unlike other states.
They are elected.
So you can actually refuse every 14 years.
Most famous one being Rose Byrd.
That's true, to oppose the death penalty. We only have a few seconds left, so very quickly, on the gas tax, McCain and Clinton agreed. Obama differed with them. McCain and Clinton wanted to get rid of the gas tax. I think the money would have just gone to the oil companies. I think Obama is right. That is pandering. We need to support alternative fuels. Real quick.
I think they're both right. I think Obama's right and wrong. Let me put it that way. The money would not have gone to the oil companies. The oil companies are, you know, delivering it for as reasonable a price as they can under the circumstances. But the minimal amount that would have been put in the pockets of Americans would not have been a significant difference.
I think that they're jacking up the price just like Enron, and we need a President Obama to stop them. I hope you've enjoyed the Inside
Scoop. God help us.
If you want to comment on tonight's show, please go to RadioInsideScoop.com and let us know your thoughts. This is Mark Levine signing off.